On January 20th, Democrat Joe Biden will likely take over as President of the United States, prompting a number of stark policy changes from the White House. To discuss what this might mean for healthcare in New York, including funding for Medicaid, we spoke Monday afternoon to Mark Houston, a veteran of the Pataki administration who is now a regulatory lobbyist for Farrell Fritz. Welcome back to the show, Mark.
Happy to be here.
So it feels like the last major healthcare legislation out of Washington, D.C. was the Affordable Care Act, and that since then, divided and even united governments haven't really been able to do anything nearly as comprehensive. When Joe Biden takes office in January, he will likely have a divided Congress. What sort of healthcare legislation, if any, could that dynamic produce, which would affect New York?
It's going to be a challenge, right? If those Georgia elections go the way everyone seems to expect them to go, and the U.S. Senate remains Republican, that will really, I think, hamper the ability of the Biden administration to do a number of the things that it had said it wants to do because they require legislative action. Now, that said, I don't think that that means there aren't going to be very significant changes, right? So he won't necessarily be able to do things like create a public option, you know, a Medicare-type buy-in that he had discussed, and that, in fact, actually was in the original Obama plan. He also probably can't lower the Medicare age without Senate concurrence or expand Medicare benefits. But there's lots of things he can do. And, you know, the other big change, I think, that has legislative implications is keep in mind, the story of the last several years has been a story of Congress trying to roll back or strike down all or some of the Affordable Care Act. I think you take that off the table, too. So there's a certain amount of stability that I think comes from a Biden administration, at least on the legislative side.
There appears to be at least some bipartisan interest in prescription drug legislation to, I guess, limit what Medicare recipients have in terms of high costs that they're dealing with. And, you know, there's also, I guess, some agreement about the need to address surprise medical bills. Are those things areas where there could potentially be compromise, or do you think that even those areas where people might have some shared interests, our partisan environment at the federal level makes it unlikely to assume that Biden's going to be signing any sort of laws into those areas?
In theory, at least, right, you could have some compromise. And when you're talking about drug pricing, not only in those areas, but in things like importation, international price indexing, bulk purchasing, you know, using the government's pricing power to reduce prices for everyone. In theory, you could at least have some bipartisan agreement on that. That's one of the few areas where you saw both candidates more or less agreeing to a great extent. However, there's always politics, right? And you don't know how a Republican Senate is going to react to things that were they coming from a Trump administration, they might have supported, but they may not, coming from a Biden administration.
So what are some administrative or regulatory powers that you expect a Biden administration to exercise?
So, well, I think one of the really exciting areas is in the Medicaid space. The Federal Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services exert all kinds of authority over Medicaid independent of Congress. Their administrative powers are very significant, and in particular, their powers to grant waivers from otherwise applicable Medicaid regulations. And you saw the Trump administration exercising that in the direction, in many ways, of restricting Medicaid. You know, it was allowing states to, for instance, impose work requirements, dial back benefits. You know, it had a program that encouraged a block granting structure where it basically just turned over a big chunk of money to the states to do with as they wished, but, you know, a far smaller amount of money than the states would generally otherwise be getting. I think under a Biden administration, they can exercise and will exercise that authority in the opposite direction. And I think that's a real opportunity for New York, because New York has been there already, right, and recognized that if we were more flexible in the way we were allowed to use Medicaid dollars, that would likely both improve care for Medicaid enrollees, but also probably reduce cost to the system.
Well, you bring up Medicaid, and heading into 2020, Governor Andrew Cuomo was grappling with Medicaid spending that was really out of control in New York, and even he was acknowledging it. And the budget in the spring includes measures to control some of that growth. Is this picture impacted at all by a change in the White House?
Certainly it could be, right? It could be very generally if there is, and I think it's fair to predict that there would be an increased likelihood of significant federal COVID aid being pushed into New York and states like New York, which, you know, all cash is fungible, and that sort of improves the picture overall for everyone. But I do absolutely think, you know, you will see a federal government that I think recognizes the importance of something like Medicaid and the value of something like Medicaid and is willing to invest in Medicaid. You know, one of the things that one of the things that's hanging out there that doesn't necessarily impact New York is, you know, what do you do about the states that did not expand Medicaid? There's about a dozen of them that have not taken advantage of the Medicaid expansion opportunities. And, you know, what can the federal government do to incentivize that? You know, again, not necessarily of direct benefit to New York, but if there is, for instance, some kind of discussion over changing the federal share of Medicaid, it's not impossible that that would benefit New York.
We're discussing what a Biden administration might mean for health insurance and health care delivery in New York, and our guest is Mark Houston, a veteran of the Pataki administration who is now a regulatory lobbyist for Farrell Fritz. Are there any executive actions taken by the Trump administration that the Biden administration might want to leave in place? For instance, I feel like the president has routinely touted actions he took to reduce the cost of prescription drugs. I don't know how true or effective those steps were, but I mean, if he did certain things, would Biden want to leave them for his administration?
Sure. I mean, in some ways, right, that's the great thing about being a new administration, because there's lots or more often than not, lots of unpleasant decisions that your predecessor made that may ultimately benefit you. And you can sort of leave them in place and, you know, not take the blame for having done them and yet reap the benefits from them. So, you know, certainly in the drug space, that's an example. And it would not be surprising if that were the situation in other circumstances. A perfect example, I mean, getting back to the Medicaid issue, all of those waivers that had been approved are time limited by definition, right? I mean, waivers are generally approved for a period of 5 years, but that essentially gives the Biden administration a big block of time to benefit from any cost savings that might come from, you know, a block granting arrangement or work requirements or something like that without, you know, having to be the person that really was responsible for that.
The Supreme Court heard arguments earlier this month in a case that could result in the final death of the Affordable Care Act, a.k.a. Obamacare. What would that mean for New York if it was, you know, put down, especially the marketplace where New Yorkers purchase health insurance?
Mm-hmm. Well, for New York and lots of other states, I think if we face the situation where the ACA were actually repealed, I think you would see states try to craft, you know, sort of their own version of that. New York, candidly, was there probably before the federal government was, even in regards to the ACA in terms of the principles of the ACA. So I think you would see New York make sure to maintain that structure in so far as possible. But the good news, I think, is I don't think we'll see a total repeal of the ACA. You know, I think, you know, there's this legal principle known as severability, where, you know, if some provisions of law are deemed unconstitutional, you can prohibit their implementation without undoing the whole package. And I think certainly in the oral arguments, we saw at least two of the more conservative justices indicate that they thought severability applied in this case. And certainly when it comes to the ACA, there are provisions of it that are attractive to both sides of the aisle. So at a minimum, I think you would see things like pre-existing condition protections maintained. But probably most of the ACA, I would say, with only sort of limited limitations around the individual mandate that would be imposed on folks that are participating in those programs now.
On the campaign trail, Biden had promised to revoke the Trump administration rule barring federally funded healthcare providers in the Title 10 family planning program from referring patients for abortions. What would that mean from New York if there was a reversal?
I mean, that is, I think, in many ways, a sea change, right? You would see in the area of women's health issues, you'd see a federal government that is, I think, much more in step with where New York state government is at this point. I think, you know, focusing on those kind of issues as really a function and an aspect of primary care that drives, you know, improved outcomes throughout the system and, in fact, probably cost savings throughout the system. I think you'd see an increased focus on that. And that would be an area where New York and the federal government were finally on the same page.
Any other areas that you're keeping your eye on in terms of actions from D.C. that could have effect in New York in 2021 and beyond?
Well, you know, we haven't talked about sort of the big issue, right, which is COVID and COVID vaccination distribution, which is something that has been getting a lot of attention recently, you know, to the point where the president actually sort of suggested, well, you know, if New York has said they don't like my plan, so fine, I'm taking my ball and going home, and they're not getting any vaccines, which, of course, is outrageous and over the top and probably not something that would ever happen and, you know, happily off the table in a Biden administration. But you'll see, I think, increased coordination with the federal government. You'll certainly, I think, see a more activist federal government when it comes to COVID response. And I think you will see, I mean, which will be a great backstop for all the states, including New York. And you'll see increased coordination, you know, between the state and federal government on all of those issues.
It's clear that Governor Andrew Cuomo won't be joining the Biden administration. What about other past and former administration officials in New York? For example, could Jason Helgerson, the past Medicaid director, or Donna Frescatore, the current Medicaid director, head to D.C.? And what about even our health commissioner, Howard Zucker? Could he be on the next train south?
One thing that is sort of public knowledge, right, is the governor and the president-elect are close. And I think, you know, that means it could go one of two ways, right? It could be that creates a wonderful pathway for New Yorkers to serve in the administration, the federal administration. It also, I think, may give the governor the ability to say, no, that person is really essential here, and we'd like to keep them here. You mentioned Jason Helgerson. Of course, he's a free agent, so right. That would not be terrifically surprising at this point.
Well, we've been speaking with Mark Houston. He's a veteran of the Pataki administration and now a regulatory lobbyist for Farrell Fritz. Mark, as always, thank you so much for making the time. I appreciate it.
A lot of fun, as always. Good to talk to you.
You've been listening to the Capitol Press Room, which you can take with you on the go wherever you download podcasts. Our engineer in Syracuse is Dave White. My producer in Albany is Tim Williams. I'm David Lombardo. Thanks for listening.
Join us again for Capitol Press Room, a production of WCNY Connected, Syracuse.